He charged forward along with Merle, Carruthers, Foreman, and several dozen more riders. A volley ripped out from the trees. Bullets sang through the air and thudded into the horses and men racing over the snowy landscape. Henry's eyes widened in surprise as he heard the roll of gunfire and saw men and horses falling before it. That was no handful of skirmishers or cavalrymen up there in the trees. That was damned Yankee infantry, dug in and waiting for the Confederates to come to them. Even with his limited experience, Henry could figure out that much. Combat was a very efficient teacher if a man lived through it. Blunted by the volleys from the trees, the charge broke up, and the men turned to ride back up the hill. Henry hadn't fired a shot. Things had fallen apart before he could do so. But Forrest wasted no time in rallying his men and ordering them to attack again.
"I figure they was in there, boys," he called out. "Now we know it."
This time the cavalrymen started firing sooner. They spread out farther, too, not giving the Yankees so many good targets, and several small groups reached the trees before being forced to retreat by the heavy fire from the Federal infantry. Henry emptied the Spencer from the back of his horse, then turned and headed back up the hill, knowing that if he stopped to reload out there in the open, he would be cut down. Since horseback charges didn't seem to be working, Forrest dismounted his men and sent them at the Union right. As they worked forward, Merle said between shots, "Schofield's got some of his men into Spring Hill ahead of us, daggummin. He's trying to keep us from reaching the Franklin Pike and blocking it." That made sense to Henry. He didn't spend a lot of time mulling over strategy, though. He was more concerned with staying alive. He used every hump of ground, every pile of rocks, every log fence he could find for cover as he advanced toward the Federal lines. Even though he had one of the prized repeaters, his ammunition was limited, so he tried to make every shot count. The Yankees were well hidden in the trees, though. Finally, the Confederates had to pull back yet again. Henry knew that Hood's infantry was coming up somewhere behind them. The cavalry might not have to overwhelm the enemy by itself. It might be enough for them to keep the Yankees occupied until Hood was in position to strike. The afternoon was waning, though, despite the fact that the overcast finally had broken and sunlight slanted down through gaps in the clouds. Given the time of year, Hood would have to hurry if he wanted to launch an attack before nightfall. Advance brigades of the Confederate infantry arrived not long afterward. The general in charge rode up for a quick conference with Forrest, and then both cavalry and infantry moved out in a concerted charge, with their respective generals riding in the forefront, sabers drawn. Not too far back, Ernie Merle said,
"That other general's Platt Cleburne, from Ireland by way Arkansas. Hell of a fighter, from what I hear."
Henry hoped that was true. They needed all the fighters they could get on their side. The infantry swung to the side to take the enemy on the flank, while Forrest and the cavalry continued to charge head-on. For several minutes, the Yankees put up a stiff fight, but now they were outnumbered and finally had no choice but to pull back. As they retreated toward Spring Hill and the Franklin Turnpike, about a mile behind them, the Confederates kept up the pressure. Henry used the last of his ammunition for the Spencer and had to switch to the pistol. The Yankees were close in front of them, turning to fight a futile rear-guard action. Close beside Henry, Wade Foreman let out a whoop and yelled,
"Give it up, you Yankee sons of bitches!"
At that instant, Henry heard a horrifying sound, the likes of which he had never heard before. It was a loud roar, followed instantly by a high-pitched whistle, and then another blast that seemed to be right on top of them. Henry's horse staggered heavily, and he had to hold on tightly to keep from being thrown. He glanced over beside him, where Foreman had been riding only a second earlier, and saw that the man was gone. Twisting in the saddle, Henry looked back and saw a mangled heap of bloody flesh that had been Foreman and his mount. A canister round from a Federal cannon had exploded right in Foreman's lap. Henry tasted bile in his mouth and swallowed the sickness that threatened to overwhelm him. No matter how shocked and horrified he was, he couldn't give in to those emotions now. The Yankee artillery continued to thunder, the big guns entering the fray now, where they had been silent earlier. Hood's forces, moving quickly, had outpaced their own artillery, and so had nothing with which to counter the Yankee bombardment. Forrest and Cleburne had no choice but to call a halt to the attack, at least for the time being. But they had pushed the enemy back almost to the turnpike. After a short breather to rest and regroup, as well as to give their own big guns a chance to come up, they could hit the Yankees again. The smell of victory was in the air. Everyone could sense it, even a novice like Henry. In the meantime, Henry found Merle and Carruthers, who had gotten separated from the others during the charge, and told them about Foreman. Merle grated out a curse.
Wade and me been friends for a long time, since before that damn war. I hope the Yankee gunner who fired that shot burns in hell.
A lot of the Yankees were probably thinking the same thing about their Confederate counterparts tonight, Henry thought. If everyone got his wish, hell was going to be busting at the seams before this fight was over. Everyone expected the order to charge again to come at any moment. But that didn't happen, and as the last light of day faded and night settled down, a courier arrived from General Cheatham with a message that Forrest and Cleburne were not to attack the Yankees again without further orders. Henry was standing near enough to the general to see the anger and bafflement on Forrest's face as he was given the message. Left with nothing to do but make the best of a muddled situation, Forrest ordered his men to feed and care for their horses. Meanwhile, the infantry began to make camp for the night, pitching tents and starting cooking fires. The frantic action of the day seemed to have fizzled to a halt. A short time later, General Alexander Stuart came up to the front, expecting an attack to begin momentarily. Finding that such was not the case, he conferred with Forrest, and then both generals set off to find Hood and discover what the plan really was, if indeed there was a plan. Henry knew nothing of the meeting between the generals, or its outcome, until orders came for the men to saddle and ride. They were going to swing around to the north of Spring Hill in one last attempt to cut the turnpike and hold it against the Union retreat to Franklin. Merle and Carruthers reminisced about Foreman. Henry mourned the man's death, even though he had known him for only a short time. But a lot of good men had died already, and a lot more would soon meet their maker, Henry figured. Tonight, it might be his turn. The cavalry rode through the darkness. A few lights in the distance marked the position of the settlement. As the riders neared the turnpike, Henry saw more lights up ahead. When they got closer, he saw that the glow came from lanterns hung on the Yankee supply wagons rolling along the road. He had time to check his pistol, then the orders came to charge. Several hundred horsemen galloped forward, their job to stop the advance of tens of thousands of Yankees. The outcome was a foregone conclusion. A few minutes of skirmishing, and the cavalry withdrew, desperately low on ammunition. They had never had a chance, Henry realized. Hood had ordered Forrest to send them up here in a last-ditch effort that signified nothing and had no chance of succeeding. At least he and Merle and Carruthers hadn't been killed or wounded, he thought bitterly as they rode back toward the Confederate camp. By morning of November 30th, everyone knew what had happened. Through indecision, confusion, and just plain bad judgment, the Yankees had been allowed to escape from what should have been a deadly trap. All through the night, Schofield's forces had streamed up the turnpike toward Franklin. Every time it had appeared that the Confederate Army had the enemy where they wanted, first at Pulaski, then at Columbia, and now at Spring Hill, the Yankees had slipped away somehow. The scattered camps buzzed with angry speculation about just what had gone wrong.
Hood's blaming it on Cheatham and Cleburne and Bate, Merle reported as he squatted next to a tiny fire with Henry and Carruthers, referring to the three divisional commanders of the army.
I heard about it from one of the boys who was up at the big house with the general this morning when they rode over to Ripavilla, where Hood's been staying. Them generals thought they'd be sitting down to a nice breakfast, but then old Hood lit into them.
Carruthers looked down at a small piece of pone in his hand.
This is all we got for breakfast.
Well, Forrest and them other officers got hell for breakfast. Hood told them it was all their fault the Yankees slipped past us last night.
Henry frowned in confusion.
I don't understand.
When the infantry moved up, General Hood never ordered them to block the road, did he? That was the cavalry's job, and there just weren't enough of us.